setting up the meeting, sweeping the floors, being DCM, CSR, GSR, whatever these things are, if you don't do it, it won't get done. So there's a challenge there somewhere. I don't have any opinion on outside issues, not here. Well, I have opinions on them. And if you want to know what they are, I'll tell you after the meeting. My opinions about a lot of things. I never saw an alcoholic who didn't have an opinion on everything. I mean, we have opinions on opinions, about opinions. That's why we said in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous to gather up more opinion about the opinion. Here's the AA name. I'll never be drawn into every controversy. You know, they have times where it comes up from time to time where people have called me up in the middle of the night wanting to know if they couldn't answer what they'd just seen on television by writing them letters and complaining to them. I tell them, no, we don't have any opinion on that. That ain't none of our business. It's an outside issue anyhow. It goes on and on and on. But I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things. But I do not take too many things outside of AA. My opinion about Alcoholics Anonymous is the most fascinating, wonderful thing in the world. It's the fuel that makes my life run, if you really want to know the truth. My participation. I'm not really interested in anything that goes on outside these rooms. Not at all. I mean, what good does it do me anyhow? It just gets me upset. I go to lunch every once in a while, and they get to talking about, we're not having egg, they get to talking, battering back and forth about the politics, and it just makes my stomach turn over. I don't want to hear any of that stuff. I don't really care about it. I'm only interested in Alcoholics Anonymous and the survival force. That's all. Now, it's not a here nor there whether I do it or whether I don't do it. It said, my public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. Attraction. What does that mean? Attraction. We always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. I would never let anybody video me. I would never appear on any type of outside televised event portraying Alcoholics Anonymous. Not at all. Not at all. I think it's a violation of traditions no matter how they do it. Because I believe, like Pat said, there's a spirit here. One of the traditions says actual or implied. Implied takes in a wide, wide range. Now, actual, you can read it to the letter here. I think there's a spirit entwined in every one of these traditions. If my death warrant is signed if I don't adhere to the spirit, if I only adhere to the letter of the law, I may be sickened and died. I better adhere to this actual or implied thing. Actual or implied. What would be an actual or implied? Well, we were talking about it at breakfast this morning, and I was saying a few things like this, that to be the letter of the law here, as it says here, I didn't say I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't speak for you. I don't either. I'll take you back to, let's say, Nazi Germany. Berlin, Jewish ghetto, guy come knocking on your door tonight. The SS says to him, are you Jewish? Does your family live here? Guy's family hid off in a cellar somewhere. The letter of the law would say to him, yep, I'm Jewish. They're down there in the cellar. Go get them. That's the letter of the law. Implied would say, nope, there ain't nobody here. That's implied. That's the spirit behind the thing. The personal thing, the salvation of the whole here is the implication. The letter of the law is selfish and self-centered. It's the I, me, me, me. That's the implication of the letter of the law, the knowledgeable of the law, the spirit. But it takes some experience. It takes some know-how. It takes some falling down and getting up and bumping into walls and going places and doing things to incorporate this experience within you. And it also takes a great deep love for the alcoholic to even want to incorporate anything like this in here. It takes a singleness of purpose, a design, and going down and walking down the middle of the road, but not being so blind you can't look around once in a while. It's an amazing thing. My lovely wife and I were in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and we were out on a little walk on Saturday. And we're walking down here, and Karen grabbed me by the arm and says, look up there. And we looked up the street, about a half a block up. There was a guy down on the floor flopping around on the street, and his buddy was bending over him. And his buddy yelled, call 911. He said, the guy's in some type of a diabetic shock or something. And so somebody ran to the store and called him. And Karen and I went up, and I kneeled down beside this guy. His name was Joe. If I live to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget Joe. I knelt down on my haunches and got right in Joe's face, and Joe had clear blue eyes. And I said to Joe, I said, how are you doing, Joe? Not too good? And he said, no. Not. I said, would you like a drink, Joe? He said, I sure would. I started to get up. There was a liquor store right there. I'm going to give him a drink, and his partner said to him, no, hold it. He pulled out a half a pint of vodka and gave him a slug. The minute old Joe took that vodka into his lips, he said, you wouldn't happen to have any Dilantin with you, would you, in your pocket? And I said, no. And I knelt down by Joe, and I said, Joe, I haven't had a drink of alcohol for over 40 years. And Joe looked at me, and he said, hey? I said, yeah. He said, you don't understand. He said, I was a policeman for 18 years, and my wife jumped off a bridge and committed suicide, and I haven't been sober since then, and I can't get sober. And I don't know, my heart tugs right now when I think about Joe, and my wife, and I've talked about it a number of times, a lovely little guy. About that time, the paramedic showed up, and one of the big old paramedic walked over, putting on his gloves, said, hi, Joe, we ain't seen you for a little while. And that didn't bother me too much, and this guy, Rudy, was his name Rudy, honey? Rudy, huh? That guy that had the half a pint of vodka, put his arm around it and started walking down the street back down to the corner, and Rudy said, you know, he said, I was sober in AA for a year. And I said, well, why don't you come back, Rudy? He said, oh, he said, because I'm still drinking. And they don't want me in their meetings because I'm drinking. My heart sunk. I said to him, we have a little gathering right up the hill. Why don't you come and be with us? He said, no, they don't want me there. I'm still drinking. I said, if you have trouble with them, Joe, come and see me, Rudy. That's a sorry state of affairs. That's what goes on out there in the world. Alcoholics are out there telling other alcoholics they can't come to AA meetings because they drink. But they open up the goddamn doors and allow non-alcoholic Al-Anons, non-alcoholic drug addicts, and everything else participate from our podium. But yet there are places that think that an alcoholic who drinks can't come here. Where have we gone to? What has happened to us in the 65 years where they took in alcoholics and took care of them? The way it was in 1961 when I came out of the penitentiary, we went on 12-step calls. We took alcoholics with us. We took alcohol with us to give a guy who may go into DTs. I can't remember but one time lately that I saw somebody in DTs. What happened to that group of meeting people in the valley that I went to that night who thought it was proper for a drug addict to take a cake in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but for an alcoholic not to be able to sit in it? Why have we gone so far? What the hell happened to us? What has happened to Alcoholics Anonymous that we could be so far away from what those two wonderful men did in 1935, for Christ's sake? That great legacy that was given to us where one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic, gets him to do something. Dr. Bob could not stay sober because of his spiritual beliefs or his religious beliefs. He stayed sober because Bill taught him the action of one alcoholic carrying the message to another alcoholic. He taught him the action of one of us caring for another, not a gathering of knowledge, not knowing how spiritual we were and praying and chanting and doing all this other nonsense. The great message is one alcoholic talking to another. Keep it. Why can't we keep it that way? What's happening to us? I'll tell you what's happening to us. I just read it. It's what's happening to us. Our public relations page is based on attraction, not promotion. We've tried to promote Alcoholics Anonymous. We got treatment centers and places within stone's throw of this place who promote Alcoholics Anonymous for their own purpose. That's why they open up the door. So all you got to do is tell them you're alcoholic. That's fine. That's what's happened to us. That's what happened to Alcoholics Anonymous. I care about that. I really care. My anonymity is my spiritual foundation. My anonymity. My anonymity, not yours. It's the foundation of all my traditions. It reminds me that I have to place principles before personality. And I'm talking to you about principles. I'm not talking to you about personality. Not at all. I don't care whose feet I step on. because I believe in my principle. I have the courage of my own convictions. I have the courage of what Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson did. Bill Wilson wrote us, when you want to talk about the requirements for Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a pamphlet that Bill wrote, Problems Other Than Alcohol. And here's what he said. Can a non-alcoholic drug addict be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, no. No way. He said, but can a drug addict who also has an alcoholic problem be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, surely. What's the requirement? What's the difference? Alcoholic. Separation of differences. You got to drop the andas here. Singleness of purpose here. It's not a panacea to ama. Where does it stop? Where does it stop? I tell you how I don't put bumper stickers on my car because I don't want somebody to see a member of Alcoholics Anonymous act like that sometimes. I think Mike alluded to a story I told him up in Palos Verdes. It's a true story because it brings it home closer than anything that I know of. It's just as most people know, I'm a salesman. I wander around out in the world somewhere and I call on people and try to sell things. And a particular time I'm out riding around in one of them industrial tracks and I saw a bunch of my products sitting in the parking lot. Well, I lit up like a Christmas tree. You know what I mean? That's like a dog looking for a bone or something, man. I'm choo-choo. And so I pull into the parking lot and park up alongside a little red Mustang car and look at it. You know, I'm an old car buff anyhow, and I look at this little red Mustang, and I saw on the bumper a circle and a triangle. AA members in there. So I walk in, walk up to the receptionist, hand her my card, and I say to her, my name's Johnny, and you know, I sell this. But it would be an opportunity for me to see the purchasing agent while I'm here, get his card, maybe make an appointment, come in and see him. She said, well, I'll give him a call. And I said, well, thank you. She called him. He said, well, about 10 minutes, I'll see him. I got a few minutes. I introduced myself to him. He said, fine. I turned, I said to the receptionist, I said, that little Mustang's a cute little car. She said, yes, it is. I said, is that yours? She said, oh, no, that belongs to the purchasing agent. Whoa. An AA brother, all that product could be mine tomorrow. I'm just raptured by that. And so I walk in there and I sit down. I don't say anything because Norm would shoot me from high heaven if I did. I could just see him sitting there saying, jackass, knock it off. So I walked in. I was very polite, very businesslike, and I shook the guy's hand and told him what I sold and that I'd be able to make some bids on his product. And I said to the guy, I said, the receptionist said, that's your little red car out there. This guy's whole demeanor changed. He said, no, that's not my car. That's my wife's car. And she went to that damned AA and ran off with one of them people. Well, you know, defending AA like I did, I'd say, well, I heard they do things like that. Could you imagine me wandering into this thing and say, all right, Charlie, I'm a friend of Bill Wilson's. Take that, friend. I mean, and today, turned around, I don't do a lot of business with this company anymore, but I do a little bit every now and then. He throws me a crumb. But I have never one time ever broken my anonymity to this man. He knows I don't drink. You know, he likes me. We talk about golf. We talk about a lot of things outside of AA. I mean, there's other things to talk about except the 12 steps. And going to meetings, you know. What I would like to think is that maybe if this guy or one of his family ever needs to come to AA and you bring him to a meeting and he sees a guy like me that he's known for years who is pleasant with him, who is honest with him, who does business with him, who asks for no quarter and gives no quarter, who performs a service for his company with some type of peacefulness about him, I would like him to think that that is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. I don't want him to think it's some blow-hearted idiot who ran in there and just because he was sober thought that he had a right to have all his damn business. I like him to think about that. And it's happened. In my experience, it has happened to me. That has happened to me. I have dealt with people for a period of years in the business that I'm in, and every once in a while I show up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and that person that I've dealt with is sitting in that room. And it's always the same conversation. I say to him, Jesus, I'm glad to see you. He said, I always knew there was something about you I like. And I said, well, I always knew there was something about you I like too. And he says, what? I said, usually your hangovers. But it's what it's all about here. It's basically, I'm not entitled to, in any way, shape, or form, get any type of credit for anything that's happened to me. I can't even take any credit for coming here. So how in the hell could I take any credit for anything that's happened to me since I've been here? I can't even stay sober. Of myself and by myself, I can't keep from taking a drink of alcohol. So how come I'm not drunk? I found the thing that I found the day I took my first drink. I found that sense of peace and comfort and ease that comes with taking a few drinks. I find it because of my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous, my willingness to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and be talked to and explained to, and my willingness to try to discover the things that apply to me as an individual and to our group as a whole and try to apply them to my life. I'm not by no wild stretch of the imagination the most perfect, wonderful person who's ever walked down the face of the earth. I'm a basic human being. But you can take this to the bank. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. I love it with every depth and fiber in my being. It's the most priceless thing I possess in my life is this magnificent program of recovery, because without it and without its people, I'm history. And if I ever get so complacent and so big in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can forget that I need to be here with you 5 or 6 times a week, and I need to be available in Alcoholics Anonymous whenever Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to be here, when I need to do whatever I want to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm asked to do, whether I want to do it or not, whether I'm willing to take my seat, if I ever forget that I'm willing to take my seat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and just become a hard thing for people like me with monumental egos, just a one among many, if I ever forget that, I'm on my way to a drink of alcohol. And a drink of alcohol to me is as it's always been. Locked up in a nut house somewhere, strapped down on the bed, or in the last time out, a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. That's why I love AA. Not for the goodness, but for the opportunity. And why the traditions and the concepts and the steps are important to me today more than ever before is because of my family. Not my lovely wife. She's probably a solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a woman that I know of anywhere. I mean, she thinks the book is something to beat me over the head with, for Christ's sake. But I hear her working with newcomers and all these kind of things. But you see, I have a daughter today, my baby daughter, who's never seen me drink. She's 38 years old. And she has a little 10-year-old boy, my grandson. I don't know what my daughter's doing. She was sober with us for a while, doing what we do here. But then she got busy in AA. She got too busy. She got to go to school. She got her job back. She became a single mother. She became all these other things, and she engage in some of the nonsensical bullshit you hear in some of these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, like you got to balance out your life somewhere. Well, she overbalanced it. The last thing I knew, she moved her speed-shooting boyfriend in with her, and I don't know what she's doing. But the concern of me is that little 10-year-old grandson of mine. Oh, I hope he never has to come to us. I pray God he never has to come here and sit in our rooms. It's not because I don't want him to have the great blessing that you and I have been given here and receiving that we've had. Not at all. I'd like for him to find the peace and contentment and the love of his fellow man and the service to others and the godliness that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous and the levity about our existences and all the things that we have incorporated in AA that we sometimes seemingly take for granted if we've been sober for a period of time. Not that I wouldn't want him to, I don't want him to go through the hell that I had to go through for him to get here. I mean, the price of admission to Alcoholics Anonymous is not a little spill sherry at your goddamn high school prom. The price of admission to this magnificent way of life and the surrender to it is not because some counselor in the treatment center told you you ought to be going to AA because you're having trouble in your life. The price of admission to this magnificent thing is what it says in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It says in our book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12-12, it says very simply this, that we engage in this thing with only the desperation of the dying. It doesn't say we engage in this because we're trying to climb up in society somewhere or this is the thing to do on television tomorrow. This is an avenue or a haven for the desperation of the dying, because nobody's going to do these things. Nobody's going to take the time that these people took to investigate and study this stuff if it didn't mean anything to them. If it wasn't desperation that did it, nobody's going to take the time to sit down and take out an inventory and fifth step and go out and make amends to the world and really doesn't want to study these things, to take the abuse from a sponsor, to go night after night and give it their time and their effort and their energy till they're sometimes exhausted, they can't even stand up, if they're not desperate. The secret to Alcoholics Anonymous is not coming here desperate, but to stay desperate here. Not to get so damn complacent that these people aren't good enough for us, and this group is not good enough for us, or that my feelings hurt here, so I'll take my little band and go over here. Well, the only thing that's wrong with that, wherever you go, you go. And my sponsor said to me a long time ago, wouldn't it be nice to have a friend along? Because you're the first guy that gets there. There isn't anything in this book that's unimportant. If you have a newcomer, or you run into a newcomer, give him the best thing in the world you give him. Give him this book. Do what the man said to me almost 41 years ago. Go read the book. I'll pray that you find you in it. And because I've been a student of this book, and because of lovely people like you in my life for over 41 years, what I stand here before you today is just what I am. Just a basic human being with flaws, and egocentric behavior, a recovering alcoholic in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, who's found a way to live where it isn't necessary for me to have to drink alcohol one day at a time for the rest of my life. That's all it is. I hear things people talk about, you know, I don't have a drinking problem anymore, I have a thinking problem. That's not the way it is with me. I'll have a drinking problem till the day I die. My only hope is that I don't ever take the first drink. That's all I got to do. I got to stay away from one drink one day at a time for the rest of my life, so I don't have to trigger this murderous obsession called alcoholism, which is destructive, self-centered behavior. So I come here and I sit with you and I learn about loving others and forgiving others and being of service to God and to my fellow man. I heard a priest tell Chuck one time, my papa, he said to him, he says, you don't seem to understand. He says, your people are awful funny people, Chuck. And Chuck was always debating these priests anyhow. He says, I don't understand what you're talking about. He says, they're always looking for something else to do or someplace else to go. And Chuck says, that seems to be their nature. And he said, don't you understand that the highest order that you could ever achieve in God's eye is to be of service to him and to his fellow man? You and I, in 2000, September of 2000, sit here with a silver platter handed to us that was created in 1935, 65 years ago, that we can pick it up and just walk in it and have a magnificent life. Sadly, most of the people who come to us will not do this. Sadly. And I realize that if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep getting what I'm getting. And when I was 5 or 6 years sober, that little old lady that talked to me in that car that night had a series of serious heart attacks, and she was dying in San Bernardino. And I was working a midnight shift out in the oil field somewhere in Long Beach, and I got word from her, and I got in my old rattletrap car, and I took off in Long Beach, and I was trying to drive to San Bernardino to be with her, and I got to her hospital room that day, and she was sitting up in her bed, and she had them things sticking all out from me, and it was just a tragic thing, and she was in like a deep coma to me. And I was, I don't know where it came from, probably tears that I'd never had before in my life coming from me, and I'm sitting in her bed, kneeling at her bed, holding her hand, crying like a baby, because for all intents and purposes, she was my mother, and I didn't want to lose her, and I had so much to say to her. I didn't know how to thank her, because how do you thank your mother that brought you to this world? And I'm sitting there saying, how do I thank you? And she opened her eyes, and she had the prettiest sparkling blue eyes that I've ever seen in my lifetime. And she said these words to me. I said, how do I thank you? She said, there's only one way in this world that you'll ever be able to say your gratitude and express your gratitude in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to people like me. And I said, how's that, Mom? And she said, that you could remain the good example of what this program can do for you. And I thank you for allowing me to be here, and I hope and pray to God that I always will. Thank you very much.